My apologies for that leader was engaged in other processes in Parliament. Let me take this opportunity to welcome you all, and we are very pleased to welcome also the new members of the board, and it is our privilege to have them here today so that we are able to interact with them. We will now go to the agenda, and we will request the committee secretary to give us the apologies.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we'll be coming through to this committee formally from the Democratic Alliance, but just that you know, Honourable Stander is going to be taking a maternity leave period, which started officially last week, but I don't think the communication has come through to be sent yet, but I'll make sure that it does.
Maternity leave?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll request that you bring the baby in the next meeting.
Chair, it will make your day like it made our day when we saw this beautiful child. It was the good news that everyone needed.
Thank you. Those are the apologies, and without wasting much time, let me request the chairperson to introduce the new members, because we don't know them. After that, we'll also introduce ourselves.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. The first introduction will be myself. My name is Rasani Daniel Hansen. I'm the chairperson of the Janelle Board. I will start from my left. I have got Mr. Msomi. He is a board member. And I've got Mr. Auma Pilu. He's a board member. And I've got Ms. Matangu, she's a board member. And I've got Mr. Mkeki, he was also a member of the Phoenix Church and has been here for some time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Those are the members. And maybe to convey the apologies, we have got other 5 members of the board who couldn't manage to be with us. Reasons being the notice to the board to attend this meeting was rather short, and they already had given prior commitment. So we convey the apologies on their behalf, and they will make sure that the next meetings of the portfolio committee they will go up. Thank you.
The apologies accepted. Let's also introduce ourselves. I will start with me. I'm Dipuoli Sasituba. I'm the chairperson of this committee. Then we'll move to my left, my right, Honourable Yeni.
I'm Natasha Mugoni, and I'm a member of the committee.
My name is Moss Davey, I'm a member of the committee as well.
Thank you very much. The other members, Honourable Marapela is not here, Honourable Singh just left, and Honourable Gwangwa. And Honourable Rancho are not here. So you meet them next time. We now go to item number 3, which is the main topic of today. We are here to be briefed by yourself on the annual report and the financial statement 2014-15. Chairperson, over to you.
Well, thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and greetings to Honourable Members. The management team of DINEL is going to take you through the presentation. I have got the Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Nsipa, who will introduce the management team that will lead in this meeting. And the entire arrangement of the presentation, he will manage that. Over to you.
Sorry, Chairperson, before you start, I see a new face here. Am I wrong?
Well, maybe you are able to.
So the executive here.
from the executive, he's going to introduce the team. We have got five members. Maybe my omission was to introduce the acting company.
Yes, I can see it. It's a new face.
Acting company secretary. She is currently acting as a company.
And give me a mark.
The
qualification. Okay, thank you. Ah, okay.
And I think the other members inside here, we have got the acting director general of public enterprise. He leads this team as well. Maybe he can introduce
his team. Yeah. Thank you, Chair. But I'm sure I've been introduced before to the portfolio committee. I'm with the acting DDG for Minnesotan Enterprises, which is responsible for the NEL, Ms. Will Carlo. It's my left here. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I now hand over to Mr.
Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee and Public Society. It is a great pleasure, really, indeed, to come and brief you on the last year's performance and our financial performance. If you allow me, honorable Chair, we would like to play you a 8-minute video. You already were surprised to see what it is that we do, and for the title of the country. So the smallest in charge of the NEL really has a role to play in keeping it up. Thank you.
Specializing in in-flight visits and performance measures for the local and the
Thank you. From the Ministry of Public Affairs, of course, we have the general board,
represented now by Mr. Dan Mata and the board members. Then we have what we call business unions. We did not call them divisions because we wanted to separate from a division and business unions because some of them are divisionally owned by the NAS and others are whole subsidiary owned by the NAS. We have about 10 divisions or business units. Life, for instance, LLC Holdings is partially owned by the NAS, but we manage that company. And at the same time, we also have associated companies where we hold minority shareholders. And these are very strategic for us in South Africa, but also very strategic for other where some of these subsidiaries are located. Like for instance, the one Tawazun. Tawazun is located in the Middle East. It's very strategic right now, and it's doing very, very, very well. It's helping very much in terms of handover for us in South Africa. The Middle East. It is the nature of if you go to page 6, you will realize most of these factories are located in the southern region. We do have one or two in northwest and some in Western Cape. How do we do all these things? Because we have here the same order. There are two things that are very important for us to take into account when we are planning for the execution of our list in general. Firstly, we have to look at all policies that relate to the NAS. Like, for instance, now there is what we call a defense bill, which is currently the main document, one of the main documents we are looking at. And that defense bill is then run by the Department of Defense, whereby there is huge requirements because there is an upgrade requirement for the National Defense Force. So it's a very important document for us. The market sensitivities around the world, not only in Africa and South Africa, but around, who are we competing with? Who is not only competing, but wants to really take us out of the market? So all those sensitivities are very important for us. So we have to do a thorough analysis of those. And then also, what is the specific intent of the NAS? Why do we have the NAS in South Africa? It's also very, very important for us to look into that. Then all that, we have to have a plan, and then we have to have a strategy of how to accept it. But all of that, of course, is directed what we call a shareholder compact or shareholder agreement with checks and monitors progress against all the plans that we have. If you look at page 9, as I said, the defense review currency for us is very, very important because it's a living document for us in terms of South African and national defense. The NAS is charged with a few sovereign capabilities that must be housed in the NAS. The NAS is charged to be a custodian of sovereign and strategic capabilities. The NAS is not charged to own everything in South Africa in terms of defense capabilities. But those that are sovereign to this country, things like where you would find if a foreign company is holding that, is therefore you're the sole actually a ransom to them. To that foreign company or foreign country. Things like command and control, things like intelligence, FBI, sensitivities in intelligence, things that fly and things that are very sensitive and things that are up off the sky that are in aerospace. I will just put it like that. So the NAS charge to be able to house and be able to manage and be able to produce those type of equipment for the South African National Defense. Of course, guided by the defense review. In terms of the context, the shareholder context, what you will see in front of you on page 10, it is not chronological, it is concurrent. Everything has to be done at the same time. So we do not say 1, 2, 3, and then we have a 6. Like for instance, support and maintain the DOD sovereign and strategic industrial defense capabilities is very important for us, as well as contribute to social and economic objectives, including skills development and transformation. It's very, very important for us. So it's not that it is chronological, but it is concurrent. Pursue financial recovery, stability of the company, and achieving profitability targets. If the NAS is not profitable, the NAS will not move forward. That, with the history of the NAS for many years, we know that. If you look at the shareholder compact in the next page, you will see that there are two areas whereby we do not achieve, and that we are striving to achieve.
those areas, basically R&D or research and development, is very, very important for Genial to be a step ahead in research and development. We are competing against countries like the United States, against countries like Israel, whereby almost 100% of their budget in terms of defense, a large portion of that goes to R&D. Countries in South America, countries in Asia, huge percentage that goes to R&D. So we have to improve our R&D contribution. Of course, we do have client-funded R&D. Client-funded R&D basically is what sometimes we call customization of the product itself. Because they might, like for instance, they can be higher or lower, the protection system is more or less. In terms of the pricing systems, the ranges that are looking for, so all those things, they'll give us some funds for us to be able to do that. Now, if you look at page 12, how do we like to be able to achieve our goals? Every company has a vision. Every company has to have a state of value we want to have. So it is important for us to be a credible, not only a credible company in terms of profit, but also be a credible company whereby you believe when you talk of financial South Africa, you must be very, very proud of it, and you know exactly what you do. That's very, very important for us to be able to. But we can only be credible if we drive revenue and make sure that revenue is coming through. And we have excellent relationships with our customers. Productivity and efficiency is very important for us, because if we cannot the efficient in your productivity, you'll always fall behind. And also, very, very importantly, the issue of transformation in the company is very prime and is very important. I'm sure Natasha will elaborate on that. To this day, is that you should have a prime, vibrant, financially stable, and so on the now. And I'm sure I'm articulating exactly what my determination is once out of the now. If you come to the capabilities of the NEL, as you have seen there on the video, I will not talk about the actual product itself. I'm talking about the capabilities, what NEL can do. We are charged to be responsible and be a strategic partner with the defense force and the police on landward, on air, on maritime, and other services. The other services include those intelligence services. If you look at the network system, what it is exactly that we do, and we have been doing it very well, such that we are a well-recognized leader in artillery systems, we are a well-recognized leader also in armor and infantry fighting vehicles, also in the vehicles now, and the protection of vehicles, and I'm talking military vehicles, including police vehicles. But also we do, and of course all those vehicles, they need what we call maintenance and care and overhaul, so it's part of our business. In air, the Roadhog, that helicopter for the first time was deployed, as you know, in the east of Congo. It changed the whole negotiating situation, such that the commander there of the United Nations came from Brazil immediately had asked us that the December was to do a conversation with them. So the Brazilians are coming here in December. They want to see the structure. They have a huge interest, and that's not the only country. We've been marketing the Roadhog for many years. But the only thing we never had seen before was that we had it in theatre. All people could believe it. They would believe maybe the foreign in South Africa is coming. They saw it happening, and it was a wonder. In a very short period of time, such that many a few countries have not shown interest here to come to South Africa to have a demo, and we have a demo in camp, especially for the president. Aerostructures, as you have seen on the video, we are leading aerostructures. I mean, we have competed against the top in the world. But the top touch of that A400 aircraft is a South African design. It's not a design that was copied anyway. And we won against competition from Italy, from Europe. And we are the only and only manufacturer. Mind you, we canceled the A400. We're not buying the A400, but they kept it because of our design, our quality, and our delivery schedule for production. We kept the A400. Of course, we do also maintenance and repair on the aviation, the helicopters, the Oryx, and other aircraft. And the maritime is a new thing to do now. we are trapped in hands of the Defense Review to be able to carve South Africa of those three areas. We are growing this business. We are a true support local, because you cannot grow a business if you don't have anything in the local. And you cannot claim to the why you're selling it if you're not doing anything. And so we have a few hopeful opportunities that are coming. And if we are able to secure this opportunity, and I'm telling you, we will be one of the leaders now in Africa. It will not take us long. Once you were able to secure any opportunities right now. So we have put a few channels into the system. I have part of the capacity. Multi-service, you know, command and control intelligence is a very, very, very important factor in security, in all security services. We're involved in that. Of course, ammunition and missiles, we adhere to ISO regulations whereby we are only limited by the distance of how far our system goes. And where South Africa is a core business that we should actually do that treaty. So we can only do so far. We cannot do intercontinental politics. We can only do so far. And that is an international agreement because of the nature of other agreements which South Africa has to do that through the UN. So we can go up to 300 kilometers. But the capacity and capability is there. We are only doing it today. And we are happy. And we are doing it. But also we are leading. We have a new missile system that is one of the top four in the world at this point, which is called AETA. UAVs, we've been involved in UAVs since 1983. How many countries have been involved in UAVs since 1983? Other than that, we do not even have a UAV. It's a challenging environment because most UAVs, as you know, they are used in theatre whereby in Afghanistan and the places whereby there have been naval action. We do not have that experience, but we do have opportunities whereby we can be able to cover some UAVs. Our UAVs at this point in time are not armed. UAVs in some other countries are armed, but our UAVs basically are used for sight and intelligence. And crime prevention, some way to even use what their program is about for combating crime approach. Of course, electronic sensors also go, and electronic also go UAV. So you can use that separately or jointly with the UAV. Growth area, not new things, but then you can go into, but it's like a cell phone. We have the advanced cell phones. We have the old cell phone for the first time, and then we have advanced cell phones. World market is yes, but there's a new version of that world, but of course of the refinement for the future. We have not yet started, however, we are still forming a baseline for how this is going to be done. This is a study commissioned by the Department of Defense, with agreement with the Department of Defense to be able to go forward with artillery systems, modernize them, lighten them, put them on a truck, specialized truck. Before they were not, everything was armored, but and this is now a new system whereby you want to be able to deploy very quickly. This system, as I have said, visual range is 20 kilometers. Your visual range is not more than 300 kilometers. Although our UAVs, you can be able to arm them, but we haven't armed them at this point in time. As I also indicated, all these are improvements on systems that we have already to modernize them. The MRO, the maintenance and repair on vehicles, on helicopters, etc. So you have new technologies into the system. We also do humanitarian militarization of ordnance or anything that is a remnant of war. We also have the capability, and we use that capability worldwide, especially with the United Nations. New capabilities, of course. Non-lethal controlled products, fire controlled products. Civil sector, we are now entering the civil sector in terms of CFI, intelligence, command and control, etc., which other countries have been doing for many, many years. FARA is a project and a program whereby it's still a conceptual model to have a regional effort. And those are things that we are thinking, not things that are really that we are meant to use manufacture. Some of them are still in a growing form. Why we put them here is just to show that the NL is not standing still, that the NL is moving forward. And then the NL has capabilities and the NL has the ability to be able to take time to a next level in terms of. I already arrived that we have
spent about 487,119 of that is canal self-funded, and then having for the rest is grant funded. Our biggest contributor to R&D really, we have to say that the Department of Defense, the self-funded one, and arms. Really, we believe canal has a future, and I think canal to a certain extent has proven itself that it has a future. We need to be vigilant, we need to work very, very, very hard. We need not disappoint the people of South Africa. Thank you. I will then ask the order to just go through the final.
Thank you very much, delighted. Mr. President, members of the committee, our shareholders and our board, I would like to take this opportunity to greet you. I am going to be starting on slide 80, and I think it's absolutely important for us to acknowledge the fact that over a period of 3 months now, we've had our annual report issued out, and I think it's important to take a specific note in that annual report that comes through quite consistently in line with historical versions of the report we've issued to the prior year. That which is transparency and relevance of the information we're putting out there, as well as the compliance to the King's Three Stipulations in terms of what it is that's relevant to the use of this report which we have issued. The information in our report is not only limited to financial information, it goes beyond that to all other areas which we view as strategically important, particularly to our stakeholders. And the list, I'm not going to go through line by line to that list, but that bears testimony to that particular fact. If we then page on to slide 90, I think it's important on this particular slide to take one step back and appreciate the fact that through DINEL's turnaround strategic intervention, DINEL is today a business that's currently sitting at about 32 billion rand order book level. It's important to keep that in mind as we're going to talk through some of the statistics that are sitting in this particular slide. We are proud to announce the results for the year ending March 2015, which we have increased our sales by 28%. And I think it's absolutely important at this point to also note, and I think we'd like to touch on this issue briefly, that as part of our strategy, it is absolutely important for us to diversify our reliance on the local market into international markets. We are currently at about 52% if you look at the split, but I think what's absolutely important is to appreciate the fact that inside that 28% increase of revenue loan year to prior, 54% is the number that's attributable to the increase in export sales from prior year to 2014-15 financial year, which talks to our effort of putting real strategic intervention to increasing our exposure into international markets. I cannot overemphasize the importance of that diversification. One element to that importance is obvious in relation to our reliance on the South African fiscal. It's absolutely important that we diversify. But secondly, as South African market is our base customer, it is important that solutions that we issue up to this particular customer are cost effective. And it can only be cost effective if we are serious about diversifying our effort into the international base. The fact that we are obviously earning foreign currencies into our fiscal is really cherry on top. We have increased our profit by 270 million rand, and in the slide to follow, I'm going to talk briefly about that. I think that this may hold for at that stage. The last green on this particular slide that talks to the roadmap we have traveled since 2011. That is testimony to the turnaround strategy that we have embarked on as a DINEL business, which in essence, and I think Zolake touched on this, rests primarily on two pillars. Pillar number one is to create sustainable profit within Denel as a business. And how we do that, we have done that historically, and we intend doing that going forward. One is to focus on growing the top line through our strategic relationship in specific key selected markets. So we are not going on a wild goose chase to the world. We are selecting our markets quite carefully. That's the third point. The second point is to focus on productivity internally within Denel and efficiency in executing these contracts which we've already signed to ensure that we deliver profitable contracts and customers' expectations in terms of shape. The second main pillar, which is equally important, is our effort in transforming our society as a state-owned entity in China. Equally important in our view. And this particular graph at the bottom here puts all of these issues into a melting pot, and the results are here for everyone to see. And we intend to maintain this result going forward. We might not be increasing sales in the period to come at the same level, but remember, we already sitting with a 2 billion order book. In other words, our sales cover for at least the next 6-7 years is certainly guaranteed. I think that's what's absolutely important to note on this particular slide. If we then go on to slide 20, on this particular slide, Chair, I think of Denel as a business of two lives. And Chair, please allow me to just elaborate a little bit what in my mind that specifically means, and hopefully the committee will appreciate some of the intricacies that we have to deal with. The first grid at the top shows you a life of Denel that was a loss-making business, and a business in its way to debt recession. As of 2011, this business turned its corner, and we are in a profit, sustained profitability phase as we translate into the future period. I think it's important to take one step back, Chair, and take the following. If you look at these numbers prior to 2011, all these negative numbers that we are showing in this particular graph, you will then appreciate the amount of a hole that Denel has dug in its previous life, which in this new phase, we need to get ourselves out of that hole. We have started on a very good path since 2011, but if you look at the numbers in the new era, we still have a long way to undo the ills of the era when we're making losses. It's absolutely important to know that. So in terms of our balance sheet, we have to do even much better than what we've done to undo. I mean, if you look at 2005, we're talking 1.5 billion loss. Now we need to undo that as we progress into the future. And it comes with a lot of intricacies and particular issues that manage the business going forward. With relation to solvency, I really want to take it categorically here that contrary to popular belief, Denel is a very healthy and solvent business, and we continue to grow that solvency as we progress into the future. Bear in mind that as we do that, we are in a search to undo the pre-turnaround era that I spoke about. If we then go on to slide 21, I'm going to spend a moment on this particular slide, Chair, that if we take the trade and other receivables line as an example, we are currently sitting at 1.5 billion N. Money that align with customers which we have to collect. I just need to spell out any possible misconception around that particular line, that line from a risk of collectability is absolutely key. So in other words, there is almost 0% chance of that line not being collectible from our customers. I think that's the one thing that's absolutely important. The second part is that from an aging perspective, which talks to the management's ability to change on money that are due to the business, that aging is in excess of 90% current. What that means is there is almost no money lying with customers which we should have received but have not yet received. And I think it's important that we understand that particular point. If you then come to loans and receivables, we certainly have increased I'm on cash and short-term deposits. We certainly are sitting at the 1.9 billion rand, which is the number that has been finding itself in multiple sources in the media space. And I think it's important that we spend half a minute on that particular line. To date, we are currently at 1.4 billion rand cash reserve within diesel. From that 1.9 billion rand, we were in March 2015. And of absolute importance is probably to highlight the fact that within that number, 1.2 billion rand, and this 1.2 billion rand was there in March, we still have it to date, is a ring-fenced cash report that is specific to a single project. Which in other words means we had in March 1.2 of the 1.9 billion for a single project and 700 million rand to run the rest of the year. Now the rest of the year is in a growing trajectory as projected into the future. And our view, and it's confirmed by our operations and performance up to today, is that we are managing within those resources to fund our growth as we pursue our future endeavor. In the solvency space, I spoke about that, the number is 1.9 billion rand. There is no question about whether TNL is really a solvent enterprise. Loans and borrowing, we certainly have increased in line with the explanation that I gave that says we have 1.9 billion rand in the bank. 1.2 of that 1.9 is ring-fenced to a specific contract. We certainly need funding to continue to grow the rest of the business outside that single entity. And we continue to do that absolutely responsibly, backed by our balance sheet as we do that. Approved by the board, yes, that's absolutely correct. I think at this stage, I will switch on to the following slide 22. This is really to confirm the position that I've spoken about, and I will take a liberty chair to address some of the issues that we've seen bubbling around, particularly the media space around our cash and utilization of cash. It is a fact, as you see in that March 2015 column, that DNL continues to be a cash generating business, albeit at a less level than we've seen in the year before. It is absolutely expected to be like that given the growth trajectory that our plans are shown. We have never, and not going to start now, not in the future, not paid any of our employees in terms of salary. In terms of our suppliers, we have been paying our suppliers as they fall due. We have as of the end of this financial month that we are in, we had about 380 million rand worth of amounts due to suppliers. To date, we have paid in excess of 220 million rand of those suppliers. There is a small portion of suppliers who are strategic to DNL, which we do engage on an ongoing basis as part of normal business practice to reaffirm and rearrange our payment terms with them. And that's normal business practice. Nothing absolutely untoward to that particular fact. And that goes to slide 22 in terms of our abilities to generate cash, which you see there as 200% of. And we are really proud of that. The slide 23, I think it's absolutely important at this point to appreciate the fact that we could not have achieved the level of performance and success that reported in the particular report if it was not backed up by proper, resolute governance processes. And it's absolutely important that we note that. We pride ourselves on that, and we try to even do better than what we think is where we are. And we take accolades that we receive from these independent bodies quite seriously. We take them as a challenge to do even better, as you can see in here. On that note, that then brings me to the end of my presentation, sir.
Can I then ask
Akash to talk about HR? I'm going to put a bit of a fuck it. I wasn't ready today. Chair, honorable members, good morning to you and thank you for the opportunity to share results. We certainly finished out of our achievements in terms of our socio-economic objectives, where we managed to achieve all of the NXT 10. Certainly some of the highlights during the last reporting period is in our achievements in terms of BBBE, where we achieved the level 2 status, and for large organizations that is oftentimes very difficult to achieve. In terms of diversity of the workforce, our black employees have increased over the past 3 years by 8%, which shows that the interventions that we implemented are yielding the desired results. In terms of attracting and retaining employees for period under review, the 64% of our new appointees were categorized as youth, so that assists us in terms of making sure that we ensure that there's a balance in terms of the number of skill and inexperienced employees. We created 275 jobs, albeit we did have 400 job opportunities in that we increased our headcount from the previous year by 400. The following slide, slide 26, just gives you an overview of our current demographics within the organization. And 25% of our workforce is under the age of 35. For us, we manage that process through various interventions, which I will share with you later on, and also just share some of the programs so that we have this continuous talent management pipeline. With regards to our demographics, as I mentioned earlier on, we increased our income by 400%. We are busy with ongoing programs to improve the representativity of females and people with disabilities within our organization, and I will explain that as we proceed. As mentioned, the business environment is mainly male-dominated, and as the male got various programs that we've implemented and are implementing to increase the representativity of females, and certainly there are yielding results. There's various programs, and that speaks to the challenge, our talent pipeline in the end of the year. On slide 28, one of our change interventions within the now. In order for us to not only change the workforce in terms of representation, but to also change the workforce and make sure that we achieve a vibrant dynamic state, we've got two key programs which we implement to change the culture of the organization. And those are our values and our leadership development program. Our values program is to ensure that there's this one the now, so although there are separate divisions of the now that we subscribe to the same kind of values. And during the period under review, we hosted our inaugural Group CEO Awards for employees from the various divisions that have displayed with excellence. In terms of leadership development, we've also revamped our program. We've identified various leadership competencies at the various levels within the organization and have developed specific programs from an executive right down to a junior management program, which we launched during the year under review. This program called the Trailblazers makes sure that the leadership competencies are developed amongst all of us so that we're able to deliver on our mandate. Our program is currently run with any business school, and each of the different levels of management have an action learning program so that the theory can actually apply back in workplace. And certainly we see very excellent results on that. On slide 29, we see our talent pipeline model, because for the now, it's, we need to ensure that from school level, we actually know our talents, and especially in terms of the representativity of women, that is where we see our feedback to the broader organization. How our program works is that we create awareness amongst youth at various platforms. So, for example, we take them to a show or various exhibitions. During the year under review, we also had our first the Now Career Expo at our new campus in Gauteng, where we had over 100 learners, and they were able to interact with the various Now divisions and see some of the products that we have that we produce. This also gives them an opportunity to understand the kinds of subjects that they need to do at school, and so that we do it from a young age, so that they do, we can encourage them to take up math exams. Our school outreach project or program is running five provinces at the moment, but later on we will go into detail with that. That also going to give additional master plan solutions so that once learners complete their matric, they're able to go into one of our other tertiary programs. Our flagship program at the Now in terms of artisan development is our the Now Technical Academy. The members did visit our facility earlier this year. And during the period under the review, we had 355 learners there in various engineering and aviation related trades. Once they completed their first year of theoretical training at DTA, they then go and do on the job training at our various divisions. Once they've completed about two years at doing on the job training, they then go back to DTA where they get a trade test and then do their trade test and qualify as an artist. We also sponsored over 100 students at other tertiary institutions at universities, mainly in the engineering field, which is a part of our business. Once our bursary students, we offer them vacation work, so they come on site and they describe that as part of their degree. And one of our other programs that's really yielding excellent results is our Engineering Academy of Learning, where our graduate engineers, as they completed their studies, join them now, and for the first year, they are in a program which is an accelerated development kind of program. So half the time they spend doing training and developing, actually from conceptualizing to actually producing a particular space for a project, and the rest of the time they spend working for the faculty, and that ensures that they get exposure across the entire sphere of engineering, and then they are able to actually be productive for following this. We've also introduced a new program during the Young Review, and it's our People with Disability Learners. The pilot program went very, very well, and we plan on continuing with that, where we've got female disabled learners, and we specifically to base our representation of female, where they are come on a one-year administrative learnership, and once they complete that, we're able to employ them on a permanent status. So in total, we sponsored over 800 learners during the period under review. We're very excited, and obviously that is linked to our excellent financial performance. We are able to achieve that and make sure that we are investing in our youth. As of now, we also have to ensure that our youth, all these various skills programs, that when they come into the workplace, that we do create an environment of learning. So within the organization, we spend 4% of our payroll on training for our existing employees, and that's done through various programs. Of importance to note is one of our succession planning, and that assists us in terms of ensuring that there's business sustainability, especially in the kind of skill that we employ. And we have both vertical and horizontal sessions. So, for example, we make sure that all the leadership levels are covered, but also with critical skills, we do ensure that when people reach retirement age, they somebody to take over. During the year and the review, as you will recall previously, we introduced the concept of deputy CEOs as a way of succession. During the year and the review, we introduced an addition of three deputy CEOs, and this time there were two female deputy CEOs, so we're very excited about that as well. There's continuous learning and development within the organization, so from an individual perspective, and also just to make sure that we keep abreast of changing technology, but also there's a lot of mentorship so that when young people come into the organization, they are assigned a body that can assist them and show them sort of. Leadership and executive coaching, that is part of ongoing training to ensure that we do improve on that. And that's it from me.
Thank you. Can we have a...
Thank you. Thank you, Lakhe. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members. I want to touch on slide 32, where we are highlighting the fact that as a company, we have identified that our supply chain is one of the instruments that CNET is going to use to have positive impacts in society and to transform society socioeconomically. We've got a particular focus area in the area of our spend in terms of supply chain. We've increased our spend on local suppliers in the financial period under review, and we're doing that in order to reduce our dependence on import and foreign suppliers. And linked to that focus on local suppliers, we've also increased the number of suppliers that are locally based whom we chain and we put into our supplier development program. We've increased the past reporting periods from 63 to 114. And as you know, that NEL has won an accolade of being one of the top 100 defense companies in the world. Our attempt is in line with the country's industrialization program to develop our suppliers so that they get to be at a level whereby they can supply also for the industry in South Africa at a global level. That is one of our focus areas. And we are going, it's also contained in the shareholder compact, and we are going to increase and improve in this current financial period. And to highlight our achievements with regards to supply chain, our spend in the period under review has been 3.1 billion only on local procurement spend, and our total spend in procurement was about 5 billion. So 3.1 billion of that was spent locally. And also another area where we are proud of, especially being a company that operates within the defense sector, is that we are increasing our spend on black women owned companies. And one area where we haven't done that well in terms of the shareholder compact, but it's a particular focus area for this current financial year, is focus on black youth owned companies, which is very important in terms also linked to government industrialization program of creating new industrialists, and also in terms of turning a lot of our young people who are job seekers to actually start creating jobs. That is another area where also our supplier development program is focusing on. And we are making strides already. I'm sure that at the end of this financial period, in terms of the shareholder context, we would have overachieved. One of the things that we've done, particularly with regards to local suppliers, is to provide the areas, for instance, in our PMP plan, whereby we provide the training to some of our supplier companies, as well as office space and machines. There's also machines, for instance, the donation of a facility and 22 machines to the value of 1.9 million, and that is at our PMP fund, and it's one of the areas whereby we are working in line with government expectations to develop young black and women-owned companies. And what I was just mentioning now, which I'd like to also draw your attention to, is that at one of the companies that we have particularly in line with what we're doing with the local supply is to focus on military veteran-owned companies. And that has been an instruction or an expectation from government that we pay particular attention also to military-owned companies. There is a contract at PMP for the recovery of old ammunition, and it's part of the demilitarization process. And we've spent 2.2 million years to date with that company. We've also have training programs in place for some of these companies. And for us to be able to contribute to socio-economic objectives of the country, which includes the skills development programs and our transformation programs, we have corporate social investment, which focuses mainly in education. And in education, our focus is largely in mathematics, science, and technology, and engineering. We've got the SOP program, which is a schools outreach program, with schools in Oliver Notes Bosch, in Gauteng, in the Northwest, in Limpopo, in Mpumalanga, and in the Free State. In the financial period under review, we spent about 55 billion in the SOP. And the SOP was in the work by providing additional tuition to learners in math and science, as well as English and life sciences. It's a standard in school whereby teachers are paid by DNEM to provide extra tuition. There is also volunteers from DNEM because we do have scientists and engineers who go and volunteer their time to teach extra classes. We have had very good results in terms of the output of learners that come out of the program. One of the top students in the Northwest last year came from this program. He was at Fundris High School, and it was as a result of our intervention into that community that we were able to achieve those results. And some of them do proceed to get our bursaries and get into our programs. So they can proceed with that into tertiary level, and also if they are Latin, they've taken engineering and they have achieved well in their studies, they're able to get into our Engineering Academy of Learning. This is a program that we intend to bring to all the provinces and not just the 5 provinces that we are currently operating in. And in terms of our environmental footprint, as there may be fears or an idea that because of the nature of our business, we will not be able to take care of the environment. But I'm happy to tell members of the committee that environmental awareness and conservation is one of the key business requirements for us. For instance, at our OTR range, which is here 2 hours from Cape Town in the Southern Cape, there is always, before any test of any weapon is done, there is always a complete environmental risk assessment that is done to ensure that before we leave the site where a test has been conducted in a state that is not that has not deteriorated. And we also are in the process of replacing our electrical geysers in some of our plants and replacing them with solar geysers. And at our PMP site, we've got a company that I've already alluded to that is owned by Mihari Veterans that lays out remnants in the region, the firing range. But also at PMT, we have registered a project to replace our coal boilers with small electrical boilers, and this will further reduce our carbon footprint. And these are some of the things that we are doing to ensure that we leave the environment in the same, if not a better, condition than we had found after we have done all that we need to do for our business. At this point, I'm going to hand over to Greg.
Honourable Chair, just in conclusion, I just want to say that all the members of the Policy Committee have very well advised to know that the capabilities of the NEL are there successful through the Department of Defense. In terms of what we were required by the Department of Defense to be able to finish through the Department of Defense, we have finished. And we are still doing it, and that probably includes the Maritime State. As you know, the Operation Partida, you will be involved in that. If you look at page 38, you will see that in terms of the protection, in terms of artillery systems, in terms of peacekeeping, and also be able to be a force that we are able to protect not only the people of South Africa, but also the economy of South Africa. We are able to do that through our mandate. But also the new programs that were requested by the Department of Defense to be able to come up with new strategic systems that will be able to be used in theater in different phases. We have done it. And that is I'm sure you heard of it, the UKCL program. And that we are in the process of delivering. Actually, the springboard of that was us to be able to do in another country the same type of program. So in terms of our mandate, we are carrying out the mandate in terms of the system itself. In terms of being part of the industrial development, we are part of the industrial development of the country in various fields, not only in terms of sharp end systems, but also in terms of intellectual and also IT systems, and also being able to design the designers, bringing new young people to the design field and be systems engineers. Because that takes a lot of years. It can be an engineer, but
to be assistant engineer is quite different because you need a lot of experience. We are doing that and we have done that. And then also looking is long-term growth. Long-term growth also is very, very important to make sure that South Africa is competent in the fields whereby we are required by the Defense Review and also by our own government to be able to defend our country. And the NAM plays a critical strategic partner role with the Department of Defense. That's my hope. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Member, and thank you, the Acting Chief Executive Officer of DNEL and the team, for the presentation. So I hand it over back to you.
Thank you so much. I'm not sure of the summary of the like. I'm sure you won't mind to call you the like. Okay. In relation to a number of issues you have raised, the issue of bringing the youth on board in internet, and yet we're still sitting with almost 65% of aging personnel in internet, and we are moving at a very slow pace in relation to making sure young people take over and run with the program of the NEL. But we will discuss as honorable members will be asking questions. Honorable members, we are done with the presentation. Let's interact with it. I would recognize Honorable Mazoni and then Dr. Liyenge, Honorable Rand and Nasky, Honorable Pei.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to everyone from the office for the presentation. I think we all know the elephant in the room is why six members of DNEL were placed on special leave. And I think it's something that we as portfolio need to discuss, and we need to get answers from DNEL as to what the situation is there. Chair, the news came out that four of the top executives were placed on special leave on a Friday afternoon. It was a Friday afternoon before the long weekend, that's why I remember it so well. And no reasons were given. Immediately following the announcement by the NEL that the special leave had been granted, and I think, look, Chairperson, we politicians deal with entities all the time, we all know that special leave means an investigation is taking place. Leaked information then came out the media regarding the purchasing of the anti-mine, I'm not in the field, but it was an anti-mine tanking vehicle, something that we literally no longer require. And the public, and including ourselves as members of parliament, were made to understand this was the reason for the investigation. And I believe the amount was 877 million, if I've got it right, somewhere around that, rand had been spent on this. And due to the purchasing of this, it had left DNEL in a situation where there wasn't fluid cash flow to pay the staff. Now, Chair, as you know, our job is oversight. And I immediately wrote to the Auditor General, because that's my job, but I do. It's not that I'm being nasty to DNEL or to anyone. I would have done it to any of the entities. I wrote the Auditor General to request an immediate and urgent investigation into whether or not the spending of this money was in fact in line with the DNEL, way forward and the strategy. And I did receive a letter back from the Auditor General saying that they would adhere to my request and would launch an investigation. Chair, I think it's perfectly all right. I mean, this is what we do. DNEL then responded with their own media statement, to my media statement, saying that I had been completely reckless in requesting this investigation, as I've made many employees very worried about whether or not they would be paid at the end of the month. And DNEL released that statement. I see the financial manager here looking quite confused. I have the statement for you, which I can give to you. And that's perfectly okay. We expect that the entities to respond to us. Chair, but this is the interesting thing. All of our information came from DNEL employees. And it was people in DNEL that were completely very, very concerned about what was going on, why special leave had been granted, and why this veil of secrecy had been spread over the entity. Now, Chair, I must say, it always to the point to me when one of, and I can't help but say this, when one of my favorite entities has an erring judgment like this, because DNEL is our success story. DNEL went from being a sinking ship And literally, I mean, none of you were there, I don't think. But you remember, we threw Janelle out of Parliament. Chair, you were there at the time. It was in the previous dispensation. You were sitting in the E249. And the reports that we got from Janelle were so appallingly bad that literally the portfolio committee threw them out of Parliament and said, there is no way you're going to present the kind of factor. And the turnaround was just madness. It was the story, it was the hope story, it was fantastic. The way you flipped into three and sold off, listed on JSC, you were remarkable. And that's why when the null face of a scandal like this, and let's be honest, it's a scandal, it happens, it's so important that we clear up the scandal and be as truthful and as open and transparent as possible. Now, I understand that legally we can't come out and give all the information because there's signed agreements and there's a legal process underway, etc., etc. But I, Chen, you know this, I've always said, our set entities fall in one area, and it's all of them, not just you, because I don't think I'm picking you up, and that's communication. If when something goes wrong, we don't communicate with the South African public, and quite frankly, with the politicians that oversee the entities, well enough, so assumptions are then made, and media reports are then believed, because the only information that we have coming out to us. So Chair, that's my first point, and I'd like a little bit of clarity regarding the special leave and where we stand with regards to the case that were ordered, and if in fact this order is continuing now that we know that it's not necessary, etc. Chair, then, we laughed a little bit about Syria earlier when he said that the market was growing in the Middle East, and I know that Janelle was very closely with the United Nations. I would like an assurance, please, and I think everyone would, that there are no sell areas and there's embargoes of certain countries where we may not deal with arms. And I would just like an assurance that Janelle is in contact with the United Nations in terms of adhering to all the regulations and that we are not selling arms to any of the countries who are on the embargo list, because that is the last scandal that we could ever want and ever deal with. And then, Chair, my very last point is this. We've just seen the student uprisings across the country, and we've seen, high school students today are going out saying, we want more opportunities to be trained, etc., etc. And Chair, I hear what you said about the aging, forgive me for saying this, the aging fleet of employees at Janelle. But I'd actually like to congratulate Janelle on the enhanced training program, where they are taking young people from schools, encouraging them to become engineers, and showing them, I remember as a kid having Meccano. I had Barbies, don't get me wrong, I think you're Barbies, but I had Meccano kids as well. And Barbie used to drive the Meccano that I built myself. And kids are fascinated by tanks and guns and arms and things that Janelle does. And I think that Janelle was very clever in a way they made engineering attractive. But this is, I want to leave you just with this last thought. I was recently in Indaba. It was an engineering Indaba at Emperor's Palace. And that came through that disturbed me tremendously. There were 400 registered female engineers in our country. And that is just unacceptable. And I'm not saying it because I'm a woman. If there were 700 men engineers, I would have been equally disturbed. But we need to make our young women and our young girls at school understand that engineering is not just for boys and for men, it's for all of us. Mm. And Janelle is doing such a good job at promoting engineering and not only engineering like being an engineer that sits and does design, actually someone that builds with their hands. You've made it, for lack of a better word, a sexy thing again. And kids want to do this because they realize how cool it is. But we've left the girls behind. Mm. So if we could just look at how we can incorporate getting girls interested in this again, I think we'll be right with that contract. Thank you.
Let me
first, maybe I appreciate the report, certainly the highlights and they relate to the sustainability of the organization and its global competitive vision, which we are all proud of. The one aspect where I would want to maybe check from the leadership of the organization with regard to the strategy of retaining skills that you go through. Because at some point, the way you do your work or your work or the way you progress, you might attract poachers into your crop. So do you have a retention strategy of your expertise in order to retain more the data that you have? Secondly, with regard to equity, do you conform to the equity that is validated, like transformation agenda of government? Secondly, with regard to finances, I did not hear the mentioning of the suspense. How do you deal with the suspense account if you do have? You know, most organizations, they don't present this account, and the manner in which it is managed is known by the top echelon, which is wrong. It should be known by all of us. It is part of the assets of the organization. Lastly, maybe on the asset management policy of the organization, do you have a policy that relates to how you manage and depreciation policy as well, because you are working with strategic equipment, which is also making you to be one of the best in Africa. So therefore, you need to have an asset register containing very important information as it relates to the origin of the equipment that you use. And it also informs your contribution in relation to the economic growth that is needed by Africa and elsewhere. Then lastly, the localization content usage by companies and companies. The president in his State of Nation address spoke on the importance of the utilization of the local content, but without compromising quality. So what is your contribution to that effect? And also trying to ensure that your service providers, those that are local, they don't lose their status of being part of your service provider because of the quality. And what is that?
Senator, I won't be long to ask you questions or observations that I've made. The nails hold 49% of the equity with a company called Towers Dynamics. This company is having a post losses that are being protected or that are there, and Utinel is still part of the company. Can Utinel explain to us how are they going to manage, or how are you managing this company with all the lessons that it is making? I see in your slide 6, I have a disadvantage of having slides that are not
the pairs that have got flags that are not there. But on page 6 of your slide, where you've got the, where you show the net facilities, what I just wanted to check with you, Daniel, are they exploring any expansion their companies to other parts of the country? Because their focus to me is more in one area, and the country is large, which I think will help us if they can expand. They will help us in being known by other provinces also, and being able to tap to those provinces that have got potential maybe in growing the company itself. On your other slide, under the next practice, the first slide, I think slide number 8. The nail strategy, there's something that is written here that says the nail strategy, and then there's a point that says plan to achieve mandate. Are you planning to achieve, or are you committed to the mandate that you are given? On slide 14, your slide 15, there's a point that says Danel is the biggest recipient of funded research and development from the Department of Defense, Army Corps, current focus areas on marine migrants, and soon Roy Flag to definition phase. With all this in mind, with all this vision that we have, you still have a problem of your decline in your spending. From 2014, you had from 466 million, and in 2015, you have 416 million. So there's a decline in your spending. I just wanted you to explain to us what happened to that. Why do you have that decline as it is shown in your slide? There's also a slide that is page 19 that says you got a growth in your revenue. I think it's revenue collection of 28%. It shows growing. Are you happy with the 28%? What does this 28% mean to you going forward as a company? Thank you very much, sir.
Sure. Just for the positive note, let me agree with Honorable Malzoni that the name is one of the success stories in the department with regard to quite a number of areas as you have highlighted. I'm thinking about the thing of it with no metal emphasis, and I'm also personally hit from the one slide that you presented. You have achieved far above the targets set by the department in terms of the shareholder complex. But I have a few issues here that I want to raise, of which some of them will be questions for clarity, and some of them will be input. Honorable Hanto spoke about the issue around the Southern dynamics. Already, it's one issue that I would have wanted us to be clarified on, especially given the fact that seemingly it's one entity where you have about 49% shares or so. Surely it's a welcome situation. If an entity where you have 49% shares find itself in that particular situation. I'm happy about the fact that of the people that you have recently appointed, you are saying about 64% of them being young people. But again, as well, I'm concerned about the area of female representation. especially at the executive level. Can you share with us practice that you have to try and correct that particular situation? From the presentation, you made it very clear that you have programs or activities that you have targeting female learners, which is fine, but if you can just clarify us in the area of female representation, what strategies do we have, especially at the executive level? The second one relates to your corporate social development activity. You did try to explain some of the interventions that you are making in schools and the like, which is a good story for sure. But I'm interested in the criteria that you are using to try and identify areas where such interventions need to be made. And the structures or stakeholders that you relate to as you identify those areas where you need to make intervention. And the second one, the second last one relates to your, you try to explain your loans and borrowings, the 13.2 increase. And the explanation, if I still remember, was around some of the funds being refunded for second project. But surely these loans and borrowing come with interest. I will argue. And I have difficulties in understanding why would certain funds be refunded for certain projects and go the option of loans and borrowing, which will come with interest when money is there, but you are saying this money is reinforced for certain projects. It's an issue that you might want to try and elaborate further, so that you are able to be convinced really that there are enough reasons to put that particular rule. The last one, Chair, and this one I want to direct it to the acting DG and the chapters in particular. It does not necessarily, it must not only be linked to the net. My apologies. I'm raising this one, HMDG and Chairman, that this issue that I want to raise now, I'm not only raising it to the net. I'm raising it to all the entities that report to the department. Is how best do you find a way to trim delegations from the entities as they come to Parliament to interact with us? From the apology that we received from the chairperson, there are about five other members of the board who have apologized. Am I right? So it suggests that you would have brought along about 10 members of the board, including the executives, about 10. That means you are supposed to be meeting a delegation of about 25 people, which to me cannot be. It's an issue that we might correct going forward. You'll have to find a way of assuming delegations that come to Parliament. It means if we're to meet all the entities in one meeting, we're supposed to be meeting about 100 people in a room. Surely the issue that we must correct going forward. It can't be. You can't have 10 board members coming to a meeting of this nation to report to Parliament. I agree with you, one is fine, because this was the first meeting for us to know the board members. It's fine, it's okay, being the first meeting. But I'm saying going forward, SDG, and with all your chairpersons, you will have to sit down and find a way to correct this particular situation. To try and find a mechanism to trim delegations that come to Parliament to interact with Parliament on a whole range of issues. Chairperson, let me pause there. I think the last one was on the area of disability. You did try to explain from the slides that were talking to issue of HR. I'm happy about the effort that you are making in the area of disability. But obviously you'll have to escalate it to and executive level where possible. We'll have to find a way to ensure that we are also able to escalate that particular intervention of people with disabilities at an executive level.
Thank you. Let me welcome Honorable Sintes and also Honorable Bangwa, who just arrived, and we are interacting with the report of the nurse. I don't know if you have some questions to answer. Honorable Singh.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yes, we were at the Chief Ops Forum, and I'm glad that we're still interacting with him. I had written down some questions, but maybe I can ask them myself, the Chair would have asked. Chair, maybe some of these questions that I'm going to ask answers may have been given. If they have been, they can say so, and I will read the report. But when I see on page 8 that in your report, that generally your clients are defense forces, it uses the word generally. I'd just like to have an idea, you know, who are your other clientele that you supply your products to? And the reason I'm asking that is just for us to be reassured that there's no clandestine supply of arms and ammunition to groups that are undesirable. But you asked that, right? Fine. Thank you very much. I'll get the answer later on. Then on the question of the post-metric programs, which colleague has asked, you're focusing on 6 provinces and not the other 3. Is there any reason why a province like KwaZulu-Natal is left out? I'm just using it as an example because it's been left out in terms of your post-metric program. But then here, they might have explained the unsecured bonds and the commercial paper. If that had been done, I'll read the minutes and get an idea. If not, maybe you need to expand on the unsecured bonds and the guarantees and the commercial paper. If you can have an explanation, it's on page 165. And lastly, Chair, when I notice your deposits in banks. Now, I know there's a fluidity in the way it happens, but in the 2015 year, you seem to have decreased the cash deposits that you had in local banks by about 75 million, and the cash deposits in foreign banks increased by 30 million. Is there any explanation for that in terms of how you trade and how you deposit your funds and where? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Bangwa, do you have something to ask you at a later date? Here we are. I don't know who's going to answer that. Also, let me just ask one question. Is in relation to the mandate as per shareholder compact. My question is a comment and a question at the same time. It relates to what I've been thinking all along in relation to the developmental stage which we say we are as government, and state-owned enterprises are supposed to drive this developmental stage and take mandates, aligning themselves or their programs to that. Now, the question is, you know, I'm taking other examples from other countries. You are in engineering space, primarily on defense issues. But are we able to, outside the mandate here, looking into the developmental, what is it that we can do as the men in relation to massively producing engineers, massively producing technicians, scientists, in a mass form? I'm looking into a small country like Cuba, where they produce doctors in big numbers, and they are able to export them to other countries to go and assist. That's the developmental character of that country. Now, us as CNL, with all the capabilities we have, with all the resources we have, are we not able to do that in a massive way? I was taking the report of statistician, the Hoko of last year. In terms of skills development, especially on blacks, we are still at 5% or so, followed by colored and Indians and the whites. But are we saying, where is our role? Why are we not making able to make an impact into this issue of skill development and aggressively so come with programs which will help us to have this gap. I'm looking into your presentation now. At one point you are saying it's 1% black owned as defined in no, not on this one. The slide which was presented by Natasha then. You know, when you look in terms of percentages, we are looking at a very low pace, Natasha. Can't we have an aggressive strategy or a model who can massify all what we are trying in terms of producing leaders in all aspects, engineers and right now we are sitting with an explosion of young people who are unemployed as a result of me not having the kids and whatever. But now, what do we do? We really seek the shareholders to compare and say this is what we have achieved and then and see. That won't take us in. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable members, we have noted your question. The board will only deal with matters relating to conferences, and all the operational questions will be answered by the acting chief together with the executive. I will only deal with three matters. I will start by the simplest one, selling arms to Syria. The answer is no. And as you know that we have got protocol in terms of the... I'm actually trying to wait for honorable member from the Democratic Alliance because you are the one who has asked the question. Yes. In terms of our dealings with selling arms, we had 100% to the United Nations conventions and rules. As you know, we have our own committee, Chair the Minister Hager, that all the orders the foreign countries go through that committee. So there's internal vetting process that we are not selling different equipment to parties that either by the United Nations we are prohibited to do that. I think you can take on top of that. And then coming to the delegation, to the size of the delegation as commented by Honorable Sadi, we have noted, as you have already pointed out, this is the first interaction between the new board and honorable members, so we felt it would be prudent that honorable members come and interact with you. So, but going forward, we have noted what you have said. Coming to the main question from honorable members from the Democratic Alliance that relates to the transaction which the NEL acquired a company which was called LFSA, which is now called Genel Backup System. Well, firstly, let me say, as the board, we are entrusted with responsibility to control the affairs of the company. And we welcome all endeavors and attempts and action by members to try to get correct information and try to use the agencies as set up by our constitution, like the Auditor General, to try to find certain information about what we do as a group. So it's not an offense to us. If you refer matters to the AG, if you refer matters to the Treasury, so that they can investigate certain things. And number two, we have got no intention to hide any information to you as honorable members of parliament, because after all, you have responsibility of oversight on what you do. And as the board, we will always encourage the management to present reports to you
for what it is, without trying to hide certain information. In respect to the transactions you have referred about, it is true that we have bought the LFA company, which is Naples Mail Vehicle System, at the amount of $885 million. The acting chief financial officer indicated that we have used the borrowings from APSA at this point, where we got $400 million from APSA, and we got $485 million from NECA. So the purchase was huge, funded through borrowing from those entities. Obviously, as you went on, you spoke about what is in the media space, the suspension or the special leave of the three executives. The chief executive officer, group chief executive officer, is on suspension. The chief financial officer is on suspension. The company secretary is on suspension. The reasons of their suspension relate to the allegation of contravention of the law, in this regard PSMA, and the memorandum of incorporation of denial, the delegation of authority in denial, and other things. I would like to give more detailed information to members. But the problem is, the more we give detailed information, the three employees who are still undergoing a disciplinary hearing, which it has to be independent. So the independence of the hearing could be compromised. But we can say to you that the suspicions were done as a result of the allegations of contravening of the law. And you have a responsibility to make sure that the mail does business within the parameters of the law, of which the PFMA is the cornerstone of all the activities of the state-owned entities. However, you will get a full report as the matter unfolds as far as the three employees. We will come and give you the report of the process of the disciplinary hearing, the conclusion thereof, and we will give a full report and what is going to come out of that. But to just reassure you, we have got every intention to make sure that GNL operations are done within the law, and GNL observes all the principles of fairness where the allegations of transgression by any employee. So the three employees will face an independent disciplinary process where they will face their things, and the outcomes of that will happen. So there will be compliance with the law, and the board will take action against any executive who conducts business contrary to the law. That will be done, and we will always appreciate your oversight, we will always appreciate your wisdom, and we will always appreciate questioning and putting us under scrutiny, because after all, we are accountable as a state-owned company to the people of the Republic. So we will always cooperate. If there is any investigation from the Auditor General as far as this matter is concerned, GNL will open the books. The rationale of acquisition, we might not all agree with it, but it was done. So GNL will give reasons why that acquisition was done, and all the circumstances surrounding the funding of that operation. I think the chief executive financial officer has stated, as far as the current liquidity and the situation with the suppliers, I think if I've omitted anything from your main question as far as this discussion, we will attempt to answer. I therefore hand it over to the acting chief executive and the management, so they will take you through all the operational questions that you have.
Honourable Chair and members, I think the approach would be on our side that each executive director has a responsibility, a functional responsibility, will settle the questions that are coming with. I will start on my side because I started with the presentation, and if you go back to the presentation that I had in front of you, probably the first page I will start to explain will be page 6, whereby the renal facility specifically shows the facilities mostly concentrated in the housing region, Malawi, one in northwest and the in the western region. To a certain extent, honorable members, you have to understand that some of these are legacy and historical nature of where this business were located before. We are in a new South Africa. It will take us investment, which we have had to do at the time when the funding and also the growth in the company and also growth in because there are so many, we have like 23 universities now in the country, whereby we will have to look at where do we take other new centers of demand. It is a fact that there were three mostly in housing region, and if you remember, it is a historic housing that has to do with Fort Chester, Walkfair, and all those years, many years ago, and also in the Western Cape. And mostly why they were placed in housing region is because many years ago, the thought was that the threat is coming from the north. But nothing has changed, so we need to relook and see as we're going forward, as the company grows, where exactly are we moving, and also to, as quality takers, you know, to develop other areas of South Africa. If you need. If you go to the page whereby we were, I think it's page 8, where we were talking about strategy formulation framework. We came to the point whereby we said the NAS strategy. What it really means is that there is a plan for the NAS strategy. Not that we are still going to plan. We have a plan for the NAS strategy. We are executing the NAS strategy. Of course, strategy is not static. Strategy has to adapt to the circumstances and the surroundings and what is happening in the project. We now plan 5 years ago. We think that we will acquire a company called LFSA, which is now DBS. But things have changed in terms of the requirements of the world and Microsoft. So there is a plan, there is a strategy, and we are setting up the strategy. Of course, with the guidance of the board, we always take the decision. If you go to page 10 about the main list as the shareholder compact, whereby we have said we are doing everything concurrently. It is a fact. It cannot be denied. But there are still folks who are declining in terms of age. It is a fact that Cuba has an excellent field force. I mean, not long ago we went to Cuba and saw how they are doing it. We are very envious of Cuba, I have to say. It is one of those ideas and it's one of those plans that our planning the near future to some of the key members of the board to be able to see how this is going to be. And it is a fact that we would really like to be able to do that, especially on engineering. I mean, they have a campus, only a campus whereby they take young people through engineering they change the engineering from high school up to master's level. And there's always a class, which is a fact that we are lacking in that and we would like to improve this. If you go to page 11, in terms of the shareholder complex, if you look at the R&D, we have admitted that we have not met our target. This is also a great challenge. Shareholders is always challenged, but it is a great a good challenge for us because the department has increased 38% instead of 5% R&D. So we have to meet those challenges by the next time we come to you. So it's a challenge, and we you do use self-funded R&D, you do use the R&D funding from AMSO, as you say, yes, AMSO has contributed to a large extent of R&D. But also, it is a lot of young people are coming out from the university. A lot of people do not have jobs. So we are having an idea to see how can we be able also to give them entrepreneurship. Not only internships, but also to even maybe to give them a 3-year college, like say what the defense is doing under the what is it? They call it the field training program, which is a 3-year program. So we are having a lot of ideas. We have to stop the system out and be able to make sure that the school goes in terms of giving, especially the age. If you see our graph on the age, it's shifting to the right. And that's not in our care. Normal care, you will find it that the age is about 35, 44. It's shifting to the right. We still have the care. But care down the line, it will remain like this. We will not have this. And then we will be good. So it is a challenge. And we are taking one of the reasons why we can take it. To make sure that we change that. Great to that. The other matter. The communication of the company on special methods, all communications of the company, being a stable company, have to be we are very much aware that we are a stable company. Therefore, anything that we say has an impact not only to the company, but to the people of South Africa. So we will find that at a certain point in time, you would expect us to communicate as maybe as what you might have seen in the paper that there was this letter about the special intervention. But it was very, very important for us to make sure that we adhere to the protocol and we adhere to the correct way not to create panic within the organization. And we did in time the organization made communication. I've made field checks in each every and we are still doing it. To the division. We communicate in program every week. COT, EXCO, top management, including with them on a Saturday. You know what EXCO is? Yeah, we call EXCO to explain what is going on. We call the unions, all the unions, and they have a presentation, and we show exactly what is the problem in Senate, especially in terms of funding and in terms of EXCO going forward. Not that Senate will not ever be able to get out of this. We are not in a situation where we are not making money. That is, if I can achieve that, I would have done it. Not only capacity issue, sometimes we find deliveries from the priority place. Sometimes we find even the deliveries themselves are not in the right place. These things, I mean, different products have to be the best of the best. We cannot take them near good quality and we find that then there's an accident and then it blows up in people's condition. And sometimes we even find the problem is that the countries whereby we have these contracts, they themselves are struggling with China. There is an economic country and they are telling us that either you cancel the contracts or they settle the payment going forward. That is happening. And we have to find a way that those type of services, the federal payments, in terms of our own cash flow, is more. So those are various issues. So, but the key issue is that they must deliver on the programs that we have. Many years ago, we tried to, I think about 15 years ago, to diversify the area into non-defense areas. I think if you remember, the area where I was deciding to do building of boats from Alaska. We tried healing the nutrition of plastic eggs. We tried a very good method. But then we realized, actually, we are not good enough. Our business, what is your mission? What is it that you are good at? Our business and our mindset is defense product. Is to be able to have good capability, good capability. But even the defense base itself has changed, it's not the same as it was before. So also on our side, some of the problems, like the cell phone engineering, we started from the military. another two by the community, by everyone here. So our mindset also is like they are for the situation migrate to use by citizens in the country. So they are setting products, we are looking at the various concerns. I cannot at this point in time say these products and products are a result of what we are trying to achieve. The challenge for me yes for us was just to be able to come here today and say we are looking to in terms of order. The issue if you do remember many years what order for them. We are looking good, but it's not a promise that we will look good forever. We are trying to make sure that we look good for everybody. If there's any method left, I'll ask my kids to address the other methods which the president asked. Also, we go and then massage babies.
Thank you very much for that. I will try to make some notes of the questions that were asked, and I must apologize as much with the chair and the members. If I use the question, please just let us know we try to do that. I think the first question that I would like to do is the question that says, there is 28% growth in revenue, great news, but what does it really mean for people? And I think it's a very important question in the sense that Genel is in a growth phase and we are focusing on the right things in terms of ensuring sustainability of programs coming into the business for execution. But the flip side of that point is that as a business, we must then be able to fund such growth. And it is common knowledge that in as far as the shareholder and the fiscal is concerned, there's limitations in terms of funding that might come through that channel. That then leaves us with the debt market by way of commercial banks, as well as the bond market and the commercial paper green market. So that's a space which we are playing in at the stage, and I will explain in the question that asking to ask what those are. There is absolute limitation even in that space. I think I need to make that absolutely clear. It's not an open checkbook in that space. Our balance sheet is absolutely critical. A portion of our funding in that space is at the back of an existing guarantee from National Treasury, which in our view is not sufficient, but we are intending to actually over a period reduce that guarantee, considering the pressure on the fiscal that is going to happen. So it is good news, we are growing, but it's bringing us, let me call it a nice challenge, as we try to fund to execute those projects. And we are doing with multiple interventions on the go, and we are comfortable with that as well, well taken. I think that's the one question. The second question was, we have this 1.4 billion rand of cash as of today, 1.2 of that is in bank, and yet we are talking about the debt market. It's an extremely unfortunate situation. You cannot manage a business like that by slicing projects within the business and not able to cost up the debt. It's an unfortunate amount. But we have no other alternative but to go through this ring-fencing option because our facilities in the debt market could not generate the guarantee that was required to get that advance payment. So we have to go that way. So what we are then doing is the business, we are all cutting the business into two. There is the ring-fenced element which we don't have to worry about well-funded, and there is the rest of the business which we have to worry about and ensure that it's properly funded. And that's really where the issue is. Our balance sheet is on a growth phase. It's not solid enough to be able to stand on its own to gather funding for the entire business that we can get that ring-fenced money into the main group. But over time, it will certainly get there. And there's a multiple intervention that we are engaging on. And one of those has to yield some fruit. And hopefully the next time we come to present, it will be a slightly different. Then the other question was on suspense accounts. We are in a fortunate position, honorable member, that is a foreign concept in our environment. We do not deal in that space. There is no suspense accounts in our environment. we don't play enough space. And I think that's really the answer to that question. The other question was about asset and depreciation policy after register. Yes, I can confirm, honorable member, we do have a comprehensive fixed asset register that tallies all of the assets the business utilizes and provides us a control mechanism to be able to check and manage those assets which are widespread across all divisions. We are utilizing those assets to generate the revenues that we are seeing, and some of those assets certainly are aging as part of normal course of business, and on a structured manner we are engaged in the process of renewing some of those assets. So those are well under control, and I think we're doing a steady job in that front. There was then a question about Power 2 Dynamics, which we are a minority partner to the business, and I think I want to take one step back to the business and state to the members through you, Chair, that in looking at the business, I really want to throw an element of caution that you need to consider the strategic positioning of a particular business and not look at the line business. What do I mean by that? Yes, we are a minority shareholder. Yes, that business, as part of it being a startup business, it has some losses. That business, as we speak today, we have an order, as part of our order book, which was 1.2 billion, and we are executing in South Africa, delivering, contacting that business to do assembly, sell into the end customer. So there's already fruit that are coming through that venture, straight directly into our business, outside that venture. We have recently signed an order for 5 billion through that venture, which is a follow-on order to the first one, which they are busy executing. So that business is here, strategically positioned in terms of the market where we think we're going to go from an export perspective into the future, and the fruit starting to show to meet it also. So the next time we sit here, we'll be telling you a different story in the next segment that you have. Then there was a question around unsecured bonds and the commercial paper. I think it's important to note this fact, that in as far as support from the business is concerned, we have a 1.8 billion worth of guarantee that we've got, with which we have secured funding from the credit market. But that 1.85 billion guarantee is insufficient to fund the levels of growth that I spoke about. And I think we must celebrate the fact that there is supply funders out there who are willing to step up at the back of the same performance that Demel has displayed over the recent history, that they will fund that business unsecured by that government guarantee. Absolutely, to fund those orders and growth that we are talking about. It's a very delicate environment. Pricing becomes an issue. We are very strict on pricing. We don't throw ourselves into lion den in terms of pricing for those instruments. We are very critical on pricing, and we are managing those through our sponsor quite diligently in terms of feedback to those investors. So it's a viable funding mechanism to our business, and we look at it to continue utilizing it into the near future. There was an issue around local versus foreign deposits, honourable member, and I think it's important to address that. Let me just categorically state that Demel as a business does not place any deposits directly to a foreign bank. So let me put it categorically here. We do not go offshore and place deposits. We utilize South African banks. Now, what that specific line is talking to? It's talking to indirect deposits by the local banks into those particular foreign instruments. And it also talks to what we normally refer to in Treasury Center, CFC, which is foreign currency accounts, cash that's coming in, which for specific reasons where there is a payment to be made for short, we will hold those that cash into those accounts and not convert it into rent. All that we have is going to be from a foreign exchange perspective. So that's what Scale is talking about. So the movement is not have all of the private fully funded out of South African economy and place into a foreign bank. I think those were really the questions that came out from a funding perspective. If there's anything that we're able to do in this.
thanks very much. Honourable members, I also try and address the questions because they came, sort of some of them are a bit similar, but if you feel after I've spoken and I haven't addressed everything, please just also remind me. I think one of the first things was about does the NAL have a retention strategy? Yes, we do. Our overall attrition is sitting at 5%, which is below the industry standard of 7%. However, we also noticed that with the younger employees, the generation wise, they change their careers at least 4 times by the time they reach 40. So it is also one of the phenomena with that sort of group of people. And what we try to do with them specifically is that if they leave the NAL, we want them to know that they can come back to the NAL, because obviously we've given them lots of skills, and so we kind of implement a sort of the NAL alumni program where people can come back to the organization. The other thing that with younger people is that they want stimulating work, so they don't want to do the same kind of work year in and year out, and we try and have some kind of job rotation to make sure that they go to other areas of business. Obviously it's not always easy, and sometimes it does work, other times not. What we've also introduced is that at the time of performance review, the line manager has to have a career discussion with the employee, and that also assists so that we ensure that their career aspirations we try and are able to accommodate. So in terms of that, we do have a retention strategy. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but we do have specific intervention, especially with our younger employees. With regards to females within the organization, how we try to improve diversity there is that each of the division of CEOs or the CEOs have performance contracts and they have specific appointment targets for females. Because we've seen that that's the only way to increase representativity into the organization. Also, the current workforce of females within the organization, we've identified the top talent, and they have a blended approach to skills development. So, for example, to ensure that there is this vertical ability or upward mobility within the organization. So that ranges from mentoring, coaching. As I mentioned during the past year, we've appointed two deputy CEOs, albeit it is a small number, but certainly it is in the right direction. We, our schools, as I mentioned earlier on, our schools outreach, we really kind of focus on women. We've also had a look at those statistics in terms of female engineers that leave, because that would be our tool to recruit them. And certainly, there's a very small pool that actually exits university or even takes up engineering as a career. So that's why we're trying to change that kind of mix. Where we are able to, certainly we have to ensure that we improve representativity throughout the organization, all of them. There was also a question about employment equity and how we perform. I think in the comparing the past 3 years in terms of BBBE, because we do have an employment equity plan that's approved by the Department of Labour, and they come and check whether we've implemented or not. But in terms of BBBE, they look at employment equity and they specifically look at your management levels, not at your unskilled labour. And in terms of that, from 2013, we achieved a score of 21% compliance. In the past financial year, we're at 44% compliance. So there is that improvement, certainly. However, we will continue to ensure that we are representative of the South African population at large. Our school outreach project, I think it will probably answer, but our intention is certainly to continue that, because that is where we get young females that become our pool to recruit them if they're in the right career. With regards to tertiary education, that was your question. We certainly produced quite a few qualified artisans and engineers over the years. And what we've done is that we've been training not only for general consumption but also for industry. And we've tried to shift the focus from aviation, which to engineering trade. so that we can encourage small business startups. Because obviously, the you know, in terms of employment, we are unable to employ all of them, but at least if we give them, they're able to start small businesses in you know, the engineering field and everything like that. We will try and find ways to have, you know, and I'm so glad the DC has agreed to find these key things programs so that financial resources do not become a problem. But I think the point of the matter is we are training for them for our own consumption, and we have to ensure that once they are qualified, they are able to apply the skills. Not if the NAL is unable to employ them, we do certainly take some of our learners, but the volume, we're not always able to absorb them. So then we will try and encourage them so that they can also employ our team.
There was one question about the maybe I can also say something about it. Through you, Chair, Honorable Chair, the matter that relates to the executive representation, Phoenix executive representation. So it is true that historically the NAR has been a highly dominated main town. It is true also that we still have challenges to change that. But it's also true that we have a pipeline of targeted female representatives at the executive level to move in to process and be part of the top executive. We currently have, I think it's 4+1 or 4+1, which really does not have country look like. So it is a challenge and we are driving toward it. That's not my opinion, my question.
Yeah, honourable members,
there's still two questions, sir. The one question is on localization content. We do pay particular attention to localization because more than anything in terms of the economic, socio-economic message, but it's also in line and aligned to the country's industrialization strategy. Our spend, the spend that I referred to, which was 2.1 billion in this financial year that is under review, was out of a total spend in fulfillment of 4.7 billion, which is about 5 billion. And that's an indication that we have most of our procurement is localized, and that goes on into our program. And also aligned to that is our enterprise and supplier development program, which has increased in size, even though in terms of the shareholder compact, we've fallen under, we've underachieved, but it is an area that we've got great appreciation of, and we are paying more attention to. So the localization program is, we are on track, we are focusing more on it, we are going to be spending more on it there. And one of the areas where we are also assisting our suppliers to be at a level whereby they won't be found wanting in terms of quality, is that there are suppliers that there's a common goal to together that we've provided facilities, and we are providing ongoing training. The next supplier that is supplies to our Denial Dynamics division, and they are other living at our at other operations of Denial. So we are assisting them in terms of training so that they can get to a level whereby for any product that we are producing, they won't be found wanting, but at the same time we are investing more and also assisting them in setting them up to be operational in the industry. And then the other question was on CSI in terms of criteria. With our CSI, which focuses more on education, math, science, and technology education, we work very closely with the Department of Basic Education to identify the schools whereby our interventions would make a difference in terms of the outputs of learners that qualify for the appropriate engineering and science degrees at universities. At this point, so besides the Department of Basic Education, we also get a lot of advice and guidance from our shareholder department, the Department of Public Enterprises. Some of the interventions and requests we respond come from the public. But in terms of this particular program, we are in these five provinces simply because of budget. It's budgetary constraint, but there is a plan on board working with the current board, which has also identified weaknesses or gaps in our CSI. We are looking at spreading it
the rest of the provinces, I'm sure including KZN as well. And on the matter of the fact that the gay child seems to be lagging behind in terms of producing female engineers, the current board has also guided us in terms of relooking our strategy so that we may be able in our SOP, our schools and this program, to target and to produce more girls, children that move into the sciences and engineering field. One of those programs that was discussed but no decision has been taken is called the Technogirl, with focus in particular so that we can increase the number of girl engineer or female engineers in the country. So we are very much aware of that, because in this current state it is just looking at learners. But now we are, with the new strategy, we are going to be focusing particular focus on the girl child and spreading the program to the rest of the provinces. And thirdly, we are partnering with the Department of Defense, which is going to allow us to have a basis whereby we expose and we give information with regards to these careers in math, science, technology and engineering, especially in rural areas, because most of our military bases are located in rural areas, and we are particularly targeting those working with the Department of Defense. And the advantage there is that most of our products are owned by the defense at the end of the day. So that should be an experiential program whereby they can see and touch and feel what their choices in terms of medicine, science and schools can end up, the avenues that it can open up for them in terms of career. Also, there is a book that I'm sure a lot of members or honorable members have got. It's a book that we launched in June. The Defense Made is which targets particularly grade 7 to 9, but anyone over and above those grades. But it's meant to give them information within the math, science and engineering to learners that are about to make that decision in grade and whether they continue with science and math or they drop it. So we are targeting those, and we've managed to distribute as many as we can through our CSI project. Even last week we had a school's outreach project, CSI event at CNN, whereby each and every learner who was there went away with the book. Thank you.
Honourable members, here we are. I don't know if there are any more clarity seeking questions. If none, let me take this opportunity to thank the delegation led by the chairperson and the members of the board. And also, before that, let me ask the shareholder, the department, you want to say something?
No, Chair, there's nothing more we can add. A distance response to members is we have noted the comments that he has made. But we just also want to emphasize that these are very complex businesses. And at times there will be a few more people than they would have preferred come through here. But we know the comment, and we have already been part of it in controlling the traveling cost.
Thank you. I was saying, let me take this opportunity to thank you, Chairperson, and the members of the board and the entire delegation for the information and the external views we have this afternoon. And we understand and we know you are operating in a very highly regulated environment as a defense manufacturer, and there's a lot of competition in what you're doing. And we, as food for thought, just to go home, and we will really appreciate if you can just, at the back of your mind, just to say what are the high-level strategic issues, socio-economic strategic issues that we need to focus on as the men to assist the country. Yes. Thank you very much. Yeah, and we as I said earlier on, we need really to think outside the box. And I normally say people beyond our grade will be saying, this is what I contributed in making sure that the country we live in is a better country, and I contributed to make a better world. And with mindset surely we can achieve that. We need really to assist the country. As I indicated, youth unemployment is a time bomb.
and we our hopes are on you as the state-owned enterprise to absorb this pressure from government. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned for this part of the session. It will remain as on the members to do with the two remaining items. Fly safely back home and enjoy the rest of the week and enjoy your weekend.
Thank you, Chairman.
Yeah.